It all happened so quickly. I imagine James telling the others one day, many months later. Jesus asked the three of us, Peter and John and me, to come with him. We didn't know what he had in mind, and you all know what that's like. We almost never did. We took our time walking up the hill, stopping every now and then to talk. When we reached the top, the three of us were off catching our breath, looking out over the valley below. We figured he would be praying up there, and that maybe he would invite us to pray with him. Nothing so out of the ordinary. We weren't expecting anything, really. But there was this light coming from a little way off, in the direction that he had gone. So we looked, of course, and that's when we saw it. He was still Jesus, still the one that we knew, but his face was shining. I know it sounds strange, but it was. Light was streaming as if from inside him. We were drawn to it, and at the same time, it was hard to look at. Piercing, engulfing, almost frightening. And I know this sounds strange too, but he wasn't alone. Moses was with him, and Elijah too. Ask Peter and John, they'll tell you the same. I don't know how we knew it was them, but it was. We just knew it to be so. We all felt we should say something. I mean, we'd never seen anything like this before, and Jesus had asked us to come and see this very thing, we supposed. I was looking for words. All I could come up with was, wow, and that didn't seem adequate. So Peter spoke first. You know how he is, always quick to the draw. He suggested the three of us offer our tents, giving Jesus and the others a place to stay. We had brought the tents with us, you know, not knowing how long a trip Jesus had had in mind, and I thought this was as good a response as any. Better than wow, anyway. I mean, really, what would you have said in that moment? Before Peter could finish, there was a cloud all around us and a voice. This is my son, the beloved. With him I'm well pleased, it said. Listen to him. I don't know if I heard it with my ears or simply felt it in my body. Maybe both, I'm not sure. But there's no doubt that's what it said. I knew it in my bones. It was so much to take in. The sight, the sound, the voice, the sense that a curtain had been pulled back, and we were seeing something truer than anything we had ever seen before. Something that had always been there, but that we had missed every single day of our lives. We fell to the ground. What else could we do? And then it was over. The light was gone, the voice was gone, Moses and Elijah were gone. How long did it all take? 30 seconds maybe? I don't know. It all happened so quickly. All I know is that it happened, just like I'm telling you now. And that not a day has gone by since when I have not thought of it. The story of Jesus' transfiguration is a strange and fascinating one, a bright blaze of light in the middle of Matthew's gospel. It's strange because of all those remarkable details, of course, the light and the company and the cloud and the voice. It is also strange because it doesn't seem at first to change anything. Jesus has done plenty of fantastic things already at this point in the story, feeding thousands with a boy's lunch and wrestling demons out of tormented people and healing the sick with remarkable power. In all of those instances, Jesus's miraculous action changed something, filled hungry bellies or made people well. Here there's plenty of dazzle and magnificence, plenty of pyrotechnics, but to what end? Nobody's fed or healed or freed by Jesus' face shining for a moment. It's scarcely begun when it's already over. Jesus is back to looking like he always did, and it's time to walk back down the mountain. So, what's the point? What's the transfiguration for, anyway? To get at that question, I think it's helpful to zoom out just a bit and look at the context for the story. Because when a gospel starts with the word 6 days later, as ours does today, it's a good idea to look at what happened 6 days earlier. And what happened, according to Matthew, is that Jesus started talking about his death. This topic had never come up before, it seems. And why should it have? Jesus was a young rabbi. It seemed his days of teaching and healing had just begun. Crowds were flocking to him, hope and expectation were mounting, his star was clearly rising, as far as anybody could tell. And then without warning, he started talking about his death. "There is no getting around it," he said. "This movement we have begun will be opposed. Conflict is on the way, and I'm not going to change course. I'm not going to go into hiding, and I'm not going to resort to violence. I am going to keep walking the path that God has set before me. And at the end of that path, not very far from here, there is a Roman cross." This didn't go down well with the disciples, as you can imagine. Peter spoke first, like he tended to do, but clearly nobody liked this plan. Nobody had seen it coming. A cloud descended in that moment, 6 days before the cloud on the mountaintop. A fog of confusion and worry and uncertainty. The disciples were suddenly faced with a whole new prospect for the way ahead, and it was not looking bright at all. Conflict, violence, loss, and the wide open unknown beyond. That's what happened 6 days before Jesus invited Peter and James and John to go for a walk with him. When you keep that setting in mind, I think the Transfiguration story takes on a new light. It is a glimpse of truth in a confusing time. A bright flash in the midst of a thick and impenetrable cloud. It didn't fix everything, of course. It didn't make the whole path known or any easier. But if you have been through a cloudy time, you know that a flash of light, even a fleeting one, is immeasurably valuable. For many of us, this feels like a pretty cloudy time, and I'm not talking about the weather. So much is shifting in the world. The international order based on rights and rules is currently being destroyed, proclaimed German Chancellor Friedrich Merz in a gathering of world leaders in Munich this past week. We feel that instability greatly here in Geneva, the city whose heartbeat is international cooperation, and the search for common solutions based on rights and rules to the greatest challenges facing the planet. Where are we going? What will the next year, the next month bring? We can guess, but we cannot know. Cloudy seasons come in our personal lives as well, times when the path forward with our families, our relationships, our health, our career is murky and unclear, when we are not sure which way to go. We each know something about this, I'm sure. We are not promised flashes of light as bright as the Transfiguration. It is a unique experience that Peter and James and John had. But the story reminds us that even in dark times, even in seasons when the fog is thick, sometimes there are flickers of light on our way to remind us of what is most true. I have heard people speak about the Buddhist monks walking across the U.S. over the past months in this way, a blaze of bright orange in the gray that has descended. As this small group has trudged 2,300 miles by foot with a simple message of compassion and love, many have found themselves stopped in their tracks, stunned even for a moment out of their hardened camps of us and them into renewed possibility of a greater and more generous we. I've heard people speak about moments of protest and resistance in this way, looking around at others, finding their voice in speaking up for justice, and seeing a bright hope of common action for the common good. I've heard people speak about a particularly beautiful sunset this way, or a piece of music, or serving alongside others, or a kind word from a friend at just the right time. Moments of brightness do come, even in cloudy seasons. So what about you? Where have you seen flashes of light and truth? Where has God's love and faithfulness blazed powerfully for you, even for a moment? The story of the Transfiguration invites us to pay attention to those flashes and to hold them close, letting them nourish and sustain us through the foggy paths ahead. It also invites us to share them, as Peter and James and John clearly did, to share with others the glimpses that we have seen, the bright flashes that are warming our hearts and keeping us going these days. In just a moment, Milad is going to come forward to the font. We will speak ancient words of promise around him. We will pour water over him. We will sing a song of faith. And I can't promise pyrotechnics or shining faces. I can't promise a voice from the heavens that shakes our bones. But right here, the curtain is pulled back just a little bit. Right here, in words and gestures of grace, we glimpse the deepest truth of things. We glimpse the flowing river of God's love. We glimpse the great family of faith from all times and places gathered on its shores. And we glimpse who we are, each and every one of us, beloved and precious children of God. It's not a long ritual. It will only last a moment. But it is a bright flash for us all, even in this cloudy time. Pay attention, friends, here in worship, and out there when you leave, because while the path is not always easy, there is light along the way, flickers of grace from our God, who is trustworthy and true, who journeys with us, and whose face is always shining with love. Thanks be to God. Amen.